is Monday, October 19th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. presidential race enters the final stretch of the campaign.
You better get out because we have a group on the other side that doesn't agree with us. You understand that? And we happen to be right. So get out there on November 3rd or sooner.
It's time to rebuild the backbone of America, the middle class, and this time bring everybody along, no matter your race, your age, your religion, your gender, ethnicity.
Free speech rallies across France following a violent attack and murder of a schoolteacher.
France is indeed a country that's very attached to secularism, mostly because of its history.
Also ahead, global coronavirus cases continue to surge. It's all on today's International Edition. Citizens across France gathered in solidarity on Sunday in tribute to a 47-year-old history teacher who was beheaded near Paris on Friday after discussing caricatures of Islam's Prophet Muhammad with his class. The gruesome attack comes less than a month after a man brutally stabbed two people in front of the former offices of the satirical Charlie Hebdo magazine. Joining us for the latest is reporter Catherine Field in Paris. Catherine, what a tragedy for the people of France. Is the government treating this as a terrorist attack?
Within hours of the attack on Friday evening, France's anti-terror prosecutor took over this investigation. The anti-terror prosecutor said at a press conference that he had the evidence that a text message claiming responsibility and a photograph of the victim were found on the suspect's phone after he was shot dead by police. So he says he has that evidence. He also says he has evidence of some members of this man's inner circle, friends, members he met at the mosque. They also had links to radical groups.
Catherine, you were witness to some of these rallies. What can you tell us?
Indeed, yes. I was at the rally here in Paris at the Place de la République. Tens of thousands of people turned out to honour this professor. Some people in the crowd sang Adieu, Monsieur le Professeur. Others sang the Marseillaise. People came. They almost talked to another. It was a feeling that you get so often in these instances, that people felt so helpless, that they wanted to be around other people to express their revulsion at what had happened. There weren't many speeches, but in fact, the French Prime Minister made a short address. He told the crowd that this sort of attack will not scare the people of France. And I'm quoting here, he said, "You don't scare us. We're not afraid. You can't divide us. We are France." So that was pretty much the feeling of all the people who came out. But it wasn't just in Paris that these rallies took place. There were in dozens of towns and cities across the country, in Toulouse, in Lyon, Strasbourg, Marseille, Bordeaux, and in Dijon. So it was across the country that people felt they had to come out and say that this just is not acceptable.
And obviously, as you mentioned, they were coming out in solidarity to grieve for this professor, their outrage over what has happened, but also a statement about the importance to citizens across France, about the importance of free speech, concerns of protecting secularism, of protecting free speech in France. Why such a deep concern, and why is this so incredibly important?
France is indeed a country that's very attached to secularism, mostly because of its history and its relationship with the church, in particular the Catholic Church. Secularism here is very strict. The state doesn't interfere with churches. Churches don't interfere with the state, don't get involved in politics. Free speech is very important. Again, related to times when people didn't have freedom of expression here in this country. And it's taught very clearly in schools here that you have a freedom of expression, you have the freedom to debate, you have the freedom to defend your own ideas. This is very important, again, and it's taught in schools. The other thing about secularism in France is it's a very clear law about secularism, and that secularism defends the right to believe. It also defends the right not to believe. So you have these measures that come together in that law. Also, education. Schools are regarded in France as absolutely secular. Religion does not enter into a school. And so the idea that something attached to a radical form of a religion had gone into the school is just against everything that a special law, which came into force in 1905, stands for in France.
What sorts of measures is the government taking to deal with the threat of violent extremism and, of course, the fear in general?
French President Emmanuel Macron met with his Security Council on Sunday evening. They have decided that when schools reopen on the 2nd of November, there will be additional security at all schools. This autumn school holiday break has come at an opportune time, if you like, because students are not due back at school for 2 weeks. However, the government and local towns are putting in place various initiatives so students, teachers will be able to go, will be able to get psychological help to deal with any fears that they might have about going back to school. These are all being put in place and will be there starting from Monday.
Paris-based reporter Catherine Field, thanks so much. With just over 2 weeks to go before the November 3rd U.S. presidential election, Donald Trump and Joe Biden are driving home their message to voters. Michelle Quinn reports.
This week, U.S. presidential candidates President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden will continue to travel the country to press their case to voters. The two are scheduled to meet Thursday in Nashville, Tennessee, for a 90-minute in-person debate. The topics released by the Nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates include race in America, climate change, and fighting COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat from California, has given the White House until the end of Tuesday to approve an economic relief package that could inject between $1.8 and $2 billion into the U.S. economy, which continues to suffer due to the coronavirus pandemic. Disagreements exist over how much funding to provide to state and local governments, among other things. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Because we want to have an agreement, we can come to negotiation. And we can do it now. What's the difference a few days, except that we could have it before the election, which we want it as soon as possible. And I certainly want it.
Around the United States, more than 27 million people have already voted, about six times the number of people who did so at the same point in 2016, according to a University of Florida professor tracking turnout. So far, Democratic counties have seen higher turnout than Republican ones. As polls show that Trump is trailing Biden in several key battleground states, some Republicans are distancing themselves from the president or expressing concern that Biden might win. But Ronna McDaniel, chair of the Republican National Committee, says Republicans are going to show up for the president on Election Day.
We are seeing this huge energy, and we are seeing really great numbers coming out for the president. And this is a race. And any Republican that doesn't recognize that running with the president is going to help them is hurting themselves in the long run.
In the final stretch before Election Day, candidates will work to generate enthusiasm and hope their supporters get out to vote. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Trump and Biden are going on offense over the weekend. Both were campaigning in states they are trying to flip in the general election. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
I love going to churches.
President Trump began his Sunday with a visit to the non-denominational International Church of Las Vegas, where Pastor Denise Goulet told him she'd had a vision.
At 4:30, the Lord said to me, I am going to give your president a second wind.
The president made this appeal.
You better get out because we have a group on the other side that doesn't agree with us.
Hello, North Carolina!
Joe Biden addressed supporters at a drive-in rally in Durham, North Carolina, mocking the president's optimistic statements on the coronavirus pandemic.
My grandfather would say, this guy's gone around the bend if he thinks we turn the corner.
I'm Ben Thomas.
The spread of misinformation makes the search for trustworthy news that much harder. But as VOA's Tina Trinh reports, tech companies are identifying media bias and helping readers discern the real news from fake.
Between Google, Facebook, Twitter, and other ways Americans get their news online, many may be experiencing information overload in the run-up to Election Day. And some information isn't necessarily accurate or even true.
8 in 10 Americans are now concerned that misinformation will play a role in the outcome of the election.
But would most Americans be able to spot misinformation if they saw it?
We are expecting the news consumer to actually do the work and recognize, is this news true? Is this biased? Is it not?
That's why Harlene Kaur and her co-founder started Ground News, which claims to be the world's first news comparison platform.
So say it's a political story about elections, we'll show you how all the way from far left to far right are covering it so you can compare.
Ground News' browser extension provides this immediately for stories.
With a single click, you can then figure out what else is available. What are the other spins on the same story?
We are all biased. We're biased by everything we know, by our life experience, and everything we don't know.
John Gable is the co-founder of AllSides.com, a site that provides media bias ratings and identifies left, center, and right takes on the headlines.
We automatically bring out different points of view. So our first three results of any search you do on a news story will give you three different perspectives on that same topic.
User experience researchers like Samir Patil have found that any additional guidance can help reduce the spread of misinformation.
And this doesn't have to be very lengthy or extensive, just a short blurb that says this might be questionable or you might want to look further into it. Just that brief intervention acts as a check and reduces people's tendency or intention to share it.
Ultimately, a healthy dose of skepticism is needed.
Just at least think about, is this likely to be true? Are there factors that may make it not true? Just that brief pause and reflecting, it might be useful here.
This election season and beyond, it's one way to separate the real news from the fake news. Tina Trinh, VOA News, New York.
Hundreds took to the streets of Lebanon's capital of Beirut on Saturday, marking 1 year since the beginning of the movement that has demanded an end to increasingly severe economic crisis, which has only deepened since the coronavirus pandemic. Near Beirut's port, the scene of a massive blast on August 4th, protesters lit a huge torch in the shape of Arabic words for October 17 revolution. Lebanon's economy has been faltering for more than a year, and conditions have worsened since the pandemic, the Beirut port blast, and the creation of a new government after the protests forced the previous government to resign. I spoke with George Aid, a reporter in Beirut, about the protests.
Definitely, there's ongoing anger in Lebanon amidst the people. So demonstrators that marched through Lebanon's capital, Beirut, on Saturday to mark the first anniversary of a protest movement that toppled the government but was then overwhelmed by economic crisis, coronavirus, and a devastating explosion that happened back in August in Beirut. The demonstrations that broke out in last October had really good reasons. So this time, a year later, people do have even more reasons to take on the streets, as they claim. So many of them were saying that what they called the revolution is not over. So the protesters that raised signs wrote on these signs that they demanded for the Lebanese president, Michel Aoun, to step aside. One of them actually said the revolution did not die. Others claimed we can hold this corrupt authority accountable. They wrote papers also inviting foreign countries and the international community to disarm the Iran-backed Shia militia group Hezbollah in order to establish a law and order in Lebanon. Hundreds of protesters marched past the Central Bank of Lebanon as well, and they targeted the bank, claiming that it was the reason behind the financial crisis that Lebanon has seen during this year. We are talking about a hyperinflation, a very, very big devaluation for the currency, the Lebanese pound.
Any idea how many people were out there? And anything, was it all ages? Was it a specific part of the population?
Well, it was definitely of all ages, different regions. It was mainly centered in Beirut, but that doesn't mean that we didn't have a lot of other small groups cutting the roads, burning tires up in the north, also in the south. The biggest and the largest group was next to where the Beirut port explosion happened. They raised a statue there, and they had torches in their hand. They called it the Torches of Liberty. So this was the main square there where they gathered and had a few words to say in regards to the first anniversary of what they called the revolution. The metal sculpture spelling out the word revolution was raised and topped by flames that lit up the evening sky in front of the port.
It certainly looked like thousands, and it looked like thousands of people were out there from the pictures. And it also looks like a lot of young people that are really looking to make significant change. And do they seem hopeful that they will achieve that?
Well, definitely the young people are behind what is called today the Lebanese Revolution or the Lebanese protest movements. They are hopeful, and what they are asking for is really to have a new political order. They are mostly, as they claim, fed up by the political parties that have been running the country since 1975, the year when the Lebanese civil war began. It ended then in 1990 and reestablished the old parties, which have led Lebanon, as they claim, to a very, very tough and rough economic crisis. And today we also have, on top of that, a very bad management of the corona situation and also the hyperinflation that is really choking the people.
Reporter George Aid in Beirut, thank you for being with us. A group of 153 vulnerable African refugees and asylum seekers were flown out of Libya to Niger recently on a plane chartered by the UN Refugee Agency. This is the first life-saving evacuation from Libya in 7 months after the operation was suspended because of COVID-19. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Among the passengers on Monday's flight are nationals of Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan, and South Sudan, including 16 families and 15 children under age 18. Many of the children are unaccompanied or separated from their parents. The UN Refugee Agency reports most of the evacuees had been living in the Libyan capital, Tripoli. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mehechit says virtually all had been arbitrarily detained and forced to live under appalling conditions for some period of time in one of Libya's notoriously bad detention centers.
The resumption of evacuation flights is especially important now, given the volatile situation in Libya, the rapid spread of the coronavirus and its health, as well as socioeconomic impact on refugees and asylum seekers who have found it increasingly difficult to support themselves and their families.
COVID-19 cases continue to rise in Libya. The World Health Organization reports more than 46,600 cases, including 681 deaths. As a precautionary measure, all passengers tested negative prior to departure. The UNHCR says they will remain in quarantine in Niger for 2 weeks and then tested again to make sure they are free of the virus. Mehechit says more than 3,400 migrants and asylum seekers are held in government-run detention centers in Libya. He tells VOA the UNHCR is advocating for their release, as many are at risk of serious abuse.
We also advocate for the release of people who might be held in any other possible such facilities, and we know that there are many, given the volatile and fragmented situation inside Libya, that there are probably many other detention centers that we do not also know of.
This is the second evacuation flight this year. The previous one was in February, before the operation was suspended because of COVID-19. The UNHCR has evacuated a total of 501 refugees from Libya this year, including 221 who have been resettled to Europe. Mehetrich says the agency is hoping to help more vulnerable people leave Libya. However, he notes much of this is contingent on finding resettlement places and other durable solutions for refugees and asylum seekers who have fled violence and persecution and cannot go home. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists report the star Betelgeuse dimmed in brightness twice over the past year. The unusual dimming set off rumors that the star was getting ready to explode into a huge supernova. A new study from the Australian National University suggests it may be another 100,000 years until the demise of Betelgeuse. Study authors also found that the red supergiant star could be smaller, much closer to us than previously thought. The study suggests it's not 650 light years from Earth, as thought, but is about 530 light years away from us. Previous research proposes the size of Betelgeuse could be bigger than Jupiter's orbit around the Sun, which is about 778 million kilometers. But the new study indicates the star spreads out to a radius 750 times the radius of the Sun, or a little over 522 million kilometers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America. Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
VOA's International Edition continues. Global coronavirus cases rose by more than 400,000 for the first time late Friday, a record one-day increase, as much of Europe enacts new restrictions to curb the outbreak. Europe, which successfully tamped down the first surge of infections, has emerged as one of the new coronavirus epicenters in recent weeks. Cases across the United States are also surging, with the coronavirus death toll climbing above 218,000. Sting, actress Renee Zellweger, and Sesame Street celebrity Kermit the Frog were among the more than a dozen entertainers appearing Sunday in Serious Fun for All, a streaming event that raised funds to support a network of camps that host seriously ill children and their families. The late actor Paul Newman's Hole in the Wall Gang was the first camp in the network and is now made up of not only camps, but also organizations providing services for children worldwide. Due to the pandemic, this was the first time the event was held virtually. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
7,300 years ago, the mutation of a single gene for hemoglobin, a component of blood, arose among the people living in the Mediterranean region and in Africa, in areas where malaria existed. Individuals with the mutated gene were more likely to survive malaria, an adaptation that helped to preserve the human species. But people who were born with two of these genes, one from each parent, suffer from sickle cell disease. Your red blood cells form a sickle shape, or like a C shape, within your bloodstream, explains Brett Gerois, a pediatric doctor and admiral in the United States Public Health Service, who currently serves as the Assistant Secretary for Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It can be due to certain circumstances or triggers, but often unexpectedly, and that causes a lot of problems.
Some of the things you see in early childhood are severe pain crises, where children are in extreme pain in their bones or in their abdomen or other places. You can have strokes with it. It can also cause profound organ damage and damage to your immune system. That damage to the immune system happens very, very early. So children who don't get appropriate care can die of bacterial infections very rapidly.
75% of the cases occur in sub-Saharan Africa, where every year about 300,000 children are born with the disease. 80% of them die before their fifth birthday. However, there is hope, and it will take just a few simple steps, said Admiral Gerois.
If we can screen, newborn screen, to identify which child is born with sickle cell disease, and just implement very basic kind of primary care, if we do that, we can save 9 million children worldwide by the year 2050.
That's the first step. Second, the children need good primary health care, including vaccinations and penicillin to prevent infections. Third, to reduce the severity of the disease throughout the years, they need to be treated with hydroxyurea, an inexpensive but effective drug. And finally, they must be treated for pain. This will not go away on its own, said Admiral Gerois. If we turn our heads, nothing will change. But if we focus on what needs to be done, what people deserve to be done, then we can change the world in a very short period of time.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.